We just heard music of Josef Martin Krauss, the German-born composer whose career mostly played out in Sweden, where he was a celebrated composer, a contemporary of Mozart. That was music from his flute quintet in D major, Opus 7. And we heard a performance by an early music ensemble called Night Music, featuring flutist Stephen Zohn. This is Classical WMUK, 89.9 FM, and online at WMUK.org. As promised, we're going to open up the phone lines now for a conversation with the members of an early music ensemble called Quartet Solonier, and it's a wonderful link to Kalamazoo with cellist Cullen O'Neill. This quartet has been quarantining, as they call it, here in Kalamazoo for the last week and a half or so, preparing music for a recording they're planning to go into the studio for in November. Welcome to Classical WMUK, Cullen O'Neill, Natalie Kress, Aniela Eddy, and Micah Demchak. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Great to be here.
In this case, I'm lucky to have all of you in the same room interacting on a speakerphone. So my only request would be for if you chime in, just identify yourself so we know who's speaking. It seems appropriate to start, however, with cellist Cullen O'Neill. Let me think. Last time we actually were face-to-face was in the studio here at WMUK. You were a high school senior and heading off to University of Michigan to study with, I think, Richard Aaron. And I remember you also had a strong interest in Russian literature. So maybe you can pick up the story from there for us, Colin.
Yeah, that was where we left off, I think. And then yeah, I went to undergrad. I went to Eastern Europe, actually ended up not completely Eastern, but I spent a year in Finland doing study abroad. And then when I came back from that, I think we might have been in your studio again. I was with Thomas Barth.
Oh,
and we were doing we were going to do a little Baroque concert. So that was actually the beginning of my interest in Baroque. And that year I got really into it and then ended up going to master's at Juilliard in historical performance, which is where I met these other three. And we formed this quartet. So, and now I'm here.
Were you surprised to discover just how exciting a field early music is and historic performance practice can be?
Yeah, honestly, I had no idea how rich it was and how much there was to learn in that field and what great like performers and scholars there are. And yeah, it was really exciting to, and it's been so quick. I feel like so much has been crammed into a few years that I've learned.
Well, let's learn a little bit about the backgrounds of your fellow players in Quartet Solonier. Let's talk to violinist Micah Demchak. Where did you grow up and how did you become interested in early music?
I grew up actually in British Columbia, Canada. In a city called Surrey, just outside of Vancouver.
I have to stop you, Micah, because I grew up in Dawson Creek, BC.
Oh, really?
Which, you know, is really hundreds and hundreds of miles away. But yeah, wow. Yeah. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, that's really cool. so I grew up there. I studied violin with a private teacher, and when I went to university for a bachelor's degree, I studied music at the University of British Columbia, and that's where I discovered the Baroque violin. There was a program with a Baroque orchestra, and we had amazing teachers and coaches that were part of the Pacific Broke Orchestra there, and they played with us. So we had a lot of professional experience working with them, and my love for it just grew, and so I was really excited to join the historical performance program at Juilliard.
Is it a strong and vibrant community that you're also joining when you become an historic performance major or performer?
I think so. I think it is, because I think that a lot of historically informed musicians seek each other out, mm-hmm. especially when we want to listen to some live music. We're always seeking out some Baroque performances, some classical performances. And that's actually how the string quartet kind of got together. Myself and Natalie went to see the Eibler Quartet, another period classical quartet, perform in their New York debut. And we were so inspired by them that we wanted to do something similar. And so we started asking around.
This was when you had already moved to New York to attend Juilliard?
Yeah, so yeah. This was near the end of our first semester there last year.
Aniela, would you please introduce yourself? You're also a violinist like Micah, but you're not averse to viola either. Yes.
Exactly. So something that's very unique about our string quartet is that we are all switching between, well, the three violinists are all playing viola as well, since viola is sort of our secondary instrument, but we had to learn it anyways for school. And for me, it was a very new experience, but I've absolutely loved it. I feel like learning viola is sort of changing my entire, broadening my horizons, changing the entire dimension of what playing in a string quartet means. So we all switch, and
Where did you grow up, Aniela?
I actually grew up in Michigan for the most part. And in Michigan, in Southfield, Michigan, so a little bit on the other side. But my mom is Swiss, so part of my upbringing was also in Switzerland.
Many of the German-speaking countries, wow, they've not really forgotten their love of classical music and its relevance today. And I can see where you would kind of have nourished a love of classical and performing through that connection.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, let's talk to Natalie Kress. Hi.
Hi, I'm Natalie. I'm originally from Philadelphia, but I currently live in Washington, D.C., and planning on moving back to New York City when we'll be starting school semi-in-person.
Semi-in-person. Yeah. Actually, if you could give us an update on how school is working at the moment at Juilliard. I know that the state of New York and the city have done enormous things to bring down the infection and coronavirus cases there. But, the virus is still with us.
Right. Well, for us, we are completely online. So all of our classes are through Zoom, our lessons. Actually, we had Steve Zone, you mentioned that was who was performing right before we came on. He came and gave a lecture at Juilliard for one of our seminar classes last year. We will be starting out doing a hybrid in-person and online in November, if everything goes to plan. They're requiring us to quarantine for 14 days once we arrive in New York before we even are allowed into the building, and they have a whole system. They have air purifiers, plexiglass, all the stuff to make it as safe as possible. But we'll see how it goes. They have many plan A, B, C ready to go.
Right. Well, let's go back to before all this started and complicated our musical lives so very much. For young women at the Juilliard School with interests in historic performance practice, was it almost a matter of expediency to form the group? I can't see how it wouldn't help your studies.
Oh, absolutely. The program is only 2 years as well. So to really take advantage of, you know, we've already gotten so many opportunities through Juilliard as a quartet. And since we're only there for a short amount of time, I'm really glad that we started it as quickly as we did, because we were able to play as a group in many master classes already. We played for the Juilliard convocation. We worked with dancers and directors already just through the fact that we've been making an effort to, develop us not just as a student group, but as a professional group. We've gotten our photo shoot, we've been doing our promo recordings, videos, and, you know, just making it known that we're available for opportunities and seeing where that leads us.
Here's where I say Kalamazoo concert presenters, such as Fontana, if you're listening, there is a very exciting young group called Quartet Solonnière that you can bring to perform here. Some beautiful music.
Yeah, we love it here.
We should talk about the name, Solonnière. I see the word salon, and I think chamber music and maybe some tradition that you could expand upon for our listeners a little bit. And whoever wants to take that, great. Just identify yourself.
Yeah, sure. So this is Micah, and we actually came up and decided to choose this name because of the tradition of the Solonnières. They were women all over Europe. It was not limited to France, as many people think, but we took on the French name, Solonnière. Mm-hmm. But it was a phenomenon all over Europe, because at the time of Baroque and classical music, there was for women, it was music was kind of private. Everything in life was private life. It was mostly conducted in their homes. So the way that they could influence public and be part of public life was to invite artists and even politicians and scientists and philosophers to come into their homes and have discussions. And they were really creating the trends and influencing the fashion of art and music at the time by introducing different artists to each other in their homes. And so it was just such a big cultural phenomenon all over Europe, commissioning music. And some of the women actually got to perform the music outside of their homes because of the commissions that they had received.
Society was stratified, of course. This would pertain to more of an upper class, royalty or somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, mostly it was upper class. I think people who were more financially stable had a bigger home to allow bigger gatherings to happen. And some women even... I was just reading about this one woman who bought a house and turned it into an opera house because she wanted to be a part of the opera. So she just made it in her own home in England, in London, instead of having to get herself involved in a public opera house, which she was not allowed to be a part of.
In this day and age, you know, I'm feeling we still live with the kind of stratified society. Things have changed. Women are no longer forced to remain in domestic settings. But I can't help but wonder if it makes, you know, as you work on these pieces, these true masterpieces that come from this age, that you also take time to maybe consider you know, the society that shaped it, and what was good and what was bad about it.
Absolutely. This is Natalie Kress. Yeah, actually, Juilliard has been really involved in making sure that our incoming lecturers are really exploring that part of the history, which, you know, maybe in the early music field, we haven't exactly observed as clearly as, you know, the music that we've been able to have access and privilege to be able to play and learn. And so, yeah, we're looking forward to learning more and more about it, about, you know, the composers who we haven't even been able to explore in the past or know about. You know, we've been trying to find them, you know, digging deeper into the history, not just playing Haydn and Beethoven and Mozart, but, you know, yeah, finding those communities that were not in the bigger part of the history shown as clearly to us. You know, we are trying to take responsibility to do that research and dig deeper. Yeah.
I do get that. It's part of my current responsibility too, here on the radio station. And was there anyone else who was thinking along those lines of this how today's discussions inform the music that you love and are working on, and how to kind of add some illumination to it?
Yeah, along those lines, as I was saying before, not just playing Beethoven, Haydn, Mozart, you know, we're looking into women composers, people of color, LGBTQ community composers from this time period. And that's been really interesting because it's so easy to, you know, since they're not the big names, because that's, you know, the history says those are the big names, who wrote that history, and, you know, why is this music not as well established or in the common repertoire? So when we've been working on these pieces, it's been really interesting to discover, you know, different composers' languages that we didn't know before, and really valuing their music. Some of it's really beautiful. We've been playing some Madeleine Lombardini's Experiment, Saint-Georges and Pleyel, composers that maybe you don't hear on everyday concerts. But yeah, they have a lot of value, and we've enjoyed exploring these languages. We were here recording until midnight last night, playing this Pleyel quartet that, you know, when we first looked at it, it didn't look like, you know, very complicated or anything, but we had to stay and practice it for hours just because we were having so much fun, and, you know, there's so much beauty coming out of these different composers' languages that's not in the common repertoire.
Right.
So, well, looking to explore that.
It's the composers of that time were being influenced by world cultures and sounds. I mean, you'll turn over a CD cover and find a movement called a canario or something that is clearly from another part of the world, that perhaps trade or, you know, how musicians do get around. So it's not completely generated by this this space in Europe.
Right, yeah.
It's just, and it must be wonderful to just realize the more you look, the more you find, and the more context there is.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think a really interesting part of it is know, our Baroque music history is really, as you said, only one part of the world. But what was going on in the other parts of the world during that same time? What were their musical stories and histories during the Baroque period? You know, we say Baroque music, but it's really, it's just Baroque music from, you know, the Western world. But, you know, it's just interesting to see what were the parallel music theories and histories and cultures that were going on. What were their histories?
I read that you are using gut strings on your instruments, and maybe I'll talk to Colin again now. As a cellist, going from those big resonating, you know, bronze and metal strings to gut strings, how did your ears handle that?
It was definitely an adjustment, but it was, to me, it was a very welcome sound, because I always preferred like a warmer, softer sound, and my teacher was always getting on me about my tiny little quiet sound, because I just did not like that steely timbre.
Yeah,
so the first time I was playing Baroque music on gut strings on steel strings for a while, and when I finally switched, I'm like, oh. But it does take a lot of getting used to, because those things crunch. You have to like figure out the perfect amount of weight to put in and speed, and yeah, have a nice arc to your bow. Yeah.
By crunch, do you mean they make some sort of unpleasant, non-musical sound if you don't hit them just right?
Right. Under your, I mean, even if you do hit them right, there's a little there. But part of the charm.
You talked about doing what you could to hear period instrument ensembles early on, and they do have a distinct sound. I mean, to me, the one of the true alluring aspects of early music groups is just the sensuous, specific sound, the straight tones, the layers, the way they kind of create the silvery cloud, if I could describe it that way.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not just, yeah, like you mentioned, the clear tone. We don't use as much vibrato. Try to use it as more of an ornament. And then another thing is that we play at a different pitch. So for Baroque music, the standard is A415 instead of A440,
yeah,
which is normal, modern. Yeah. And for classical, then the standard is A430, which is between the A fully rising. But yeah, which does take a lot of getting used to, because what's nice about the Baroque A415 is that it's exactly a half step lower than modern, so you're still hearing these pitches that you're familiar with, but A430 is like right in between, so it's kind of hard to get used to. But in Europe at that time, the standard for A was actually in many, it was all over the place. Some places low as like 390. And one of our teachers trying to get us to play at 438, which is pretty much modern pitch, too little.
Oh, my.
Yeah, because apparently that was the standard for Vienna. So we're still kind of trying to research then and figure out, yeah, what pitch we're going to play at for different pieces or for a concert. But, that was interesting.
If you've just tuned in to Classical WMUK, I'm speaking with the members of Quartet Stallonier. They include Kalamazoo native Cullen O'Neill, who is the cellist, and three violinists who also switch to viola at times. That's Micah Demchak, Aniela Eddy, and Natalie Kress, all studying at the Juilliard School in the master's program, and finding opportunities where they can to perform early music as Quartet Stallonier. And we'll be recording in November. The four of you have been here in Kalamazoo, rehearsing and recording and quarantining is the the word you used, Colin. This is pretty, I could keep talking about early music for like the whole hour, so maybe I will go back to that.
Sure.
We were talking about pitch. I've always heard that for some that the reason standard pitch kept getting higher and higher is for the sort of the brilliance of the sound. You know, conductors would say, you know, tighten it up so that we can sound a little fresher than the orchestra next door, I think. Is that true?
Sorry. I think that's it. I mean, the A is still rising. And yes, I think Micah has taught me that.
Hi, this is Micah. So another thing that we learned was that when they were developing wind instruments, the pitch of the wind instruments was always changing, and it was usually higher than what the string instruments were tuned to. So in an orchestra, when orchestral music and the different instruments were performing together more often, the orchestra had to tune to the winds. The string instruments had to tune to the wind instruments. So slowly the pitch was rising because of that.
Well, that sounds like a merry-go-round of folly.
Yeah.
I would not trust a flutist to provide, you know, a solid pitch on any note of the scale.
Well, it's true that all over Europe, the pitches were different because the instrument makers for wind instruments were different. And so in Vienna, pitch was rising quicker than in other parts of Europe. So it was different everywhere you went.
That really can cause a problem of stress on the instrument that you're playing on, right?
Absolutely. The gut strings are breaking frequently. Yesterday, Colin, her C string, her lowest string, broke during our rehearsal. Aniela goes through about a string a week on her E string. The humidity when we're playing inside, and then outdoor concerts now during this quarantine coronavirus era, our instruments are struggling a little bit in the humidity when we're outside, but we always have an extra pack of strings ready to go because it comes with the game.
Can you talk to us about how you are supplied with gut strings? They are made from guts?
Yeah, so this is Aniela Eddy, and sheep gut is what we tend to use. There's a whole bunch of different gauges that you can go with. So depending on your instrument, you have a different thickness and length, et cetera, for the string. So I'm still personally discovering what works best for my violin. Sometimes you want a thicker E string. For classical pitch, you actually want a lower number gauge because you can tune up easier. The string is a little bit longer and narrower, more flexible. But yeah, we get our gut strings from, it's kind of a different world actually, because for me, when I switched from modern violin into learning about and playing Baroque violin, I had to figure out who was going to sell these gut strings. And it's a whole...
You need a supplier.
Exactly. So there's a whole separate world out there that when you just, you know, ask around and talk to people know about where to buy your gut strings from. So for me personally, I buy my gut strings from a lady in New York City. Her name is Gabriela Baroque, and she's so nice. She also is a violin maker or instrument maker. I think she also makes cellos and so on. But she kind of operates out of her shop, small shop, and sells gut strings. And during quarantine, actually, I broke so many strings as the weather started changing because humidity is not kind to the gut strings. And I was kind of in a panic mode because I had to record. It was just an exam for school, but I had to get that done. And I broke in the time span of probably 5 minutes, three different strings, and I ran out of just my entire supply because it had been a couple weeks of this trend. So luckily, Gabriella was close by. I could bike right up there, get a few strings, and she left it outside on her doorstep for us, for me.
Wow. I think I've heard there's a supplier that is based in the UK, one of the few makers of gut strings. And because the early music world is still so vibrant, I'm assuming there must be some other firms and locations that that supply them.
Yeah, so Gabriella is just actually, she just has a whole bunch of different strings from different companies, suppliers. Uh-huh. But some of the more common suppliers are the Gamut strings or the Toro strings, or I think there's one called Aquila too. But yeah, not as many options, but definitely options to explore what works best for each personal player.
Quartet Salonier will be going into the studio in November, and on the album will be works of Boccherini, Mozart, and Haydn. And these works, by this time, the instrumentalists weren't expected to do a lot of improvisation at this point in history. Just follow what's on the page for the most part. The story is quite different some decades before that. And in my mind right now, I am hearing violinist Monica Huggett and her take on Corelli, where, you know, you play it one time, go back eight bars and play it your own way. I'm wondering if improvisation is something you've worked on, something you admire, and something that is part of your wheelhouse as players.
Yeah, that's something. Oh, sorry, this is Cullen speaking. Yeah, it's something. There's definitely a heavy focus on that. And most of what we play in school is not classical music, but Baroque, Baroque music. And so I wouldn't necessarily say we're taught improvisation, but we're kind of immersed into this this world, and we're hearing it all the time. Our peers and our teachers are ornamenting their music, so we kind of learn the language and absorb it. And it's been really interesting, actually, having gone from Baroque music to this classical music now, seeing how some of that translated over onto the page. Yesterday we were having a coaching on this Beethoven, which is the latest work that we've worked on. And it's Opus 18, number 2. I don't know if you know it, but it has all these flourishes that are just so similar to the things we'd be improvising in Corelli. So it's been so interesting coming back to this classical repertoire, because of course, as a modern player, I did Haydn and Beethoven, but it just feels like completely different music now.
Yeah,
that I have this whole background. I feel like I've like traveled through the ages, and now I'm there, right with Beethoven.
Isn't that wonderful? Time travel through music and styles, and just the richness of culture as you work with cello and violin and viola. What is, I think what's next for Quartet Salonier is this album. And I did see on your Facebook page or a mention of the Carmel Bach Festival. You were scheduled to perform there. I'm not sure if that worked out because of COVID-19.
Yeah, so this is Daniela speaking again. And we auditioned for a new program that the Carmel Bach Festival
kind of just started this year, which actually did not end up happening, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So this was actually the reason we decided to quarantine for the first time, which was back in July. We came to Kalamazoo and had a two-week intensive rehearsal retreat here, and sort of to substitute the opportunity that we had missed out on at the Carmel Bach Festival.
Well, I'm sorry you missed that opportunity, and I'm impressed that you took the time to stay positive and productive. And I wish I could hear you. You're going to send that recording my way, I hope, yes?
Oh, we'll definitely do that for sure.
I'll be so proud to put it on the airwaves in Kalamazoo. We're nearing the end of our hour. I have a little bit of closeout music from a Haydn Opus 20 quartet from a period ensemble called the Mosaic Quartet. But Micah, Aniela, Natalie, and Cullen, thanks for letting me get to know you and share your progress with our listeners today. And all the best for the months ahead.
Thank you so much for having us on your program. We enjoyed talking to you.
All right. We'll catch up again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you.